Hey friends, this is Fun Therapy, and my name is Mike Foster. And together we're going to dive into the messy and brutal, but wonderfully beautiful parts of life. And we do it with a smile and a heart full of hope. Because without the stains and the scars, hope is just an afterthought, isn't it? A luxury instead of a necessity. And without our imperfections, there is nothing to place into the hands of God. And that's where our stories belong, in the hands of grace. For when God writes our lives and our stories, there are never mistakes, just movements to bring us closer to our Creator and to connect us to each other. His way always gets us closer to becoming love and releasing all the beauty inside of us. My name is Mike Foster, and this is Fun Therapy. Hey friends, I'm so glad you're here, and I want to tell you about just something I posted on my Instagram account a couple weeks ago. If you don't follow me on Instagram, I'm MikeFoster2000, and I use Instagram as really a way to visually represent the things that we're talking about here on the Fun Therapy podcast. I think of it sort of like fun therapy with pictures, and so if that sounds like your cup of tea, just follow me at MikeFoster2000. But I mentioned in a post that I had been feeling sad, and that sadness had sort of crept into my heart. And I really think it's important, number one, just to honor all emotions and to notice them. And I don't like feeling sad. I don't really consider myself to struggle with sadness. But when it does show up, and it does show up, when it creeps into my heart, I have to notice it, and I think that's really important. My son had left for Mexico City and is going to be living there for a year, and I was sad when I was walking by his empty room, and I was sad about some of the things that I've been working on that didn't quite turn out the way that I thought they would turn out, and had some disappointment around that. And I was sad because I had someone message me through Instagram and privately message me that they were so down and discouraged that they didn't want to wake up tomorrow. And I felt sadness about that. And the reality is whatever we're putting out into the world, our conversations, our podcasts, our Instagram feeds, I just think it's incredibly important to be honest wherever we're at. We don't have to fake it. And that's why we're doing this podcast. And that's why we're talking about the things that we're talking about. And so I hope you continue to join us for this. I also want to just encourage you to subscribe to the podcast through iTunes, hit the subscription button, and leave a rating and review. We're kind of at a critical point where with the podcast, just trying to keep this sustainable. And so as we continue to build the audience, it's really important that we know that you're there. And so it would mean a lot for you to subscribe and to leave a rating and review. So thank you in advance. I also want to tell you about my workshop that I've mentioned before very often on this podcast, Rescue Academy. You can get more information at rescueacademy.com. It's a two-day training workshop where we do both personal work and learn how to help others and do their own work. And I teach you tools and strategies and teach you how to do cool little doodles on back of napkins and take very complex things and try to make them as simple as possible and really make you impactful in terms of not only your life that you're leading, but also your passions to be a force of good in the world. And so that sounds like you, if you're on the front lines of helping people, I encourage you to come join us for the Rescue Academy workshop, rescueacademy.com. On this episode of Fun Therapy, I welcome my friend Toby Slow. Toby is a senior pastor and the teacher at Cross Timbers Church. It is a dynamic, thriving church where thousands attend their three different campuses in the Dallas area. I've had the opportunity to speak there a couple times, and It's an amazing place. And Toby is an amazing communicator. He's an incredible leader and a great friend and a man I so highly respect, as you will soon come to find out why. And so in this episode, we process together his long struggle with anxiety and panic attacks. And this is a very honest conversation and a behind-the-scenes look at an issue that is often misunderstood. And now, my friends, this session of Fun Therapy with Pastor Toby. So how are you?
Today I'm in a good place.
Yeah.
Today.
Tell me about the not so good places.
For me, since 96, when I, was first diagnosed with panic and anxiety, my whole definition of a not good place has changed. Out of control physically, in a lot of ways. Being in a place where you can't pray yourself, think yourself, positive mental way yourself out of where you are in that moment, that's a bad place.
Tell me about... So you said 96.
Yeah, 96, 97.
What was that? Describe that moment.
It's funny, Mike. Lots of times, bad things get kind of fuzzy. The first panic attack I ever had, I can remember everything about it like it was yesterday. I can remember what the sheets looked like when I was laying in the bed. I can hear my wife, in REM. She has a gift of that. And sitting straight up and my heart pounding and my breathing like I just run a 100-yard dash. And literally my hand shaking and wondering what was happening to me. And spending the next 3 hours literally trying to walk it off, like the little loop in my house, and it getting worse and not better. And one night turned into the next night that turned into the next night. And everything in my life on the outside, great wife, two young kids, living in the ministry of my dreams, all great, and yet there's this thing I can't seem to get my hands around. And being in an environment like I created, in your head of, I can't tell anyone.
Mm-hmm. So you felt shame about it, embarrassed about it. What was the thing that you were telling yourself about why you couldn't say anything about it?
I firmly believe that if I told my wife, she would leave me. If I told leaders in the church, I'd get fired. Such a performance-based view of life that I was really out of options. I can remember lying. We had a sunken living room. This is day 4 or 5, and I'm lying on the floor, my head up on that step. I've got music playing behind me and just begging God to do something. And nothing. And again, no paradigm for this. Nobody to talk to. By my own doing, by the way. I sure don't put that on anybody. But driving down I-35 the next day, catching myself in the thought, if I hit that bridge abutment, is anybody going to know? That's when I knew I was in trouble. Hmm. And not because I had courage, not because I had faith, but out of desperation, I went home and told my wife the whole thing.
What were the first words for you when you sat down with her? How did those words come out? What did you say?
I said, Mike, I don't think I'm a very good person. Hmm. And I'm in trouble. And what followed was a litany of all of my mistakes. And again, I never used the word panic. I didn't know what it was. I just said, I don't know what this is. And I don't know how to fix it. And just kind of ugly cried.
What was her response?
She said, I love you. I don't want to hear about any mistakes from the past. I want us to move forward into the future. And I think it's not an exaggeration, so it's probably the first time it was I had received what I would consider to be unconditional love. Hmm. Not saying it's the first time it was given to me, it's the first time I received it.
Over 40 million Americans struggle with an anxiety disorder. It's almost 20% of people. Panic attacks are extremely unpleasant and can be very frightening. Panic attacks can occur unexpectedly during a calm state or in an anxious state, and they present physical symptoms such as a racing heart or knots in your stomach, chest pain, or feelings of choking. And what differentiates a panic attack from other anxiety symptoms is the intensity and the duration of the symptoms. Panic attacks typically reach their peak level of intensity in 10 minutes or less and then begin to subside. And so here's Toby, where everything on the outside seemed to be all great and in perfect condition, but on the inside he feels like he can't tell anyone, that he's begging God to do something about what's going on inside, and nothing, and he can't figure it out, and he's flooded with anxiety, leading to despair, even considering taking his own life, and thus saying, coming to the clarity moment, knowing that he was in trouble.
I understand what worry is. Anxiety is not worry. I battle worry at times. Anxiety can come when I'm trusting God, when I'm full of faith, and well-intentioned Christian friends insinuating that if I just prayed more, if I just believed God more, it actually makes it worse, not better.
Mm-hmm. And you feel more judged, like you're not doing enough, or you're not believing enough, or that, or you're just doing something wrong, Toby.
Well, part of it, on a tangent, is the church's view on mental illness and these issues. You'd never tell a diabetic, if you just believe God more, prayed harder, although you do believe God could heal a diabetic. Mm-hmm. I mean, this like it or not, through a series of events, this is the testimony of my life, is my battle with this issue. And I've talked about it in many, many different places and asked people to come and let me pray for them. And I've had people tell me that the Lord's lifted something off of them in that moment. And I believe he has, but he hasn't for me.
Mm-hmm. So tell me about what starts happening in your body when an attack happens. What does that look like?
I would say a majority of the time, firstly, I'd say it happens at night, but not only at night. But it is, I usually my hands begin to sweat a little bit. I get the sweaty palms, or my heart is going running a little bit faster. I would say the severity of it for me comes in how hard I'm breathing. There are times that it's just a really fast heart rate and my mind seems to be going 100 miles an hour. It's not, I don't know if there's a conscious thought I have in that moment, but it begins to just rise up in me. And it seems like the more that I try to breathe deep, relax, it gets worse, not better.
It's like this runaway train.
Yeah. It's like a train. And, you know, it's especially bad at night because usually it happens, I sit straight up in the bed and instantly awake. And I tell people, if you've ever been driving down the highway at night and all of a sudden the police lights come on, how you feel in that moment, that's how I feel. Mm-hmm. It just, there's no reason. And once the officer gives you the ticket and drives off, it doesn't go away. It takes some time, usually, for me to get through that season. And unfortunately, or fortunately, you know, the people who have, the Lord's brought into my world by my family, they've had to learn how to interact with me in those seasons, which, quite honestly, many times is a no-win situation.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I have a lot of people that I talk to individually and that are mates of someone who has this. And I will tell them, your mate needs to hear the truth, and their first response is going to be, I know that. But keep telling them the truth anyway. Hmm. And Micah, my wife of almost 34 years, she can see it coming in my eyes. I can't fool her. And I've had to come to the place where I can't apologize to her for a choice she's made to love and walk. But it's hard. I know it's hard for her. I know. There were seasons when it was hard for my kids. I know one of my greatest fears has been that this would be my kids' lot in life. You pass it down, you know. That's a great, that was a huge fear, especially in the early days, was how was this affecting my wife? Mm-hmm. Apologizing over and over and over until one day a counselor said, quit apologizing for her choice. But I couldn't get past my kids. And now my children are adults. And this is going to sound really strange. It sounds almost like a cliche. I just don't know any other way to say it. I see the gift of it. Hmm. I see Romans 8:20. I see God using it for good. Because my daughter does fight it. And the first person he calls her dad. And there's a connection that has been built there that she has somebody that, honestly, I never had.
So she doesn't have to be alone in it, like you were.
And she feels free to text me the stuff that we never want to say, because she knows that I get it. When you dig deep into anxiety, the big question I get, well, is it spiritual? Is it physical? Is it emotional? The answer is yes. It's all of those things. But it makes me more aware. That makes sense?
Mm-hmm.
It makes me aware of the frailty of my life.
To struggle with a chronic condition, to have that daily reminder of the frailty of life, your view, your whole viewpoint just changes. It shifts from these easy answers or these religious cliches are often just rendered powerless and look foolish. And as Toby shared about how he felt like a burden to his family and how he is acutely aware of those ramifications of his panic attacks and his struggle with anxiety, we see nothing but love from his wife, Micah. 34 years of marriage kind of love, through thick and thin kind of love, through the deepest hell and highest heights kind of love. Toby's family chooses him in every way. Yes, there is a cost, and a burden must be carried, but for Toby, he is also discovering that life is deep and honest and mysterious. And through the struggle, he has learned to receive life's most precious gift, the unconditional love of another.
I would tell you, this sucks. I would tell you, I should be better than this. I mean, I think it's a lie you believe at some point. Hey, I should be stronger than this. I should be able to deal with this better. My family would be better without me.
And that's a. Tell me why you believe that. Or at times, do you believe that? What is the thing that is convincing you of that?
Oh, it's at the core of my issue. It's believing in who I really am. I mean, that's a battle for my heart. It's believing that I'm less than. And I would have said 5 years ago that this makes me feel less than. But I'm working my side of the street, man. Nothing can make me feel something. That's what I'm believing. And it makes me be that little kid again. He just wants to do good so his daddy will tell him, good job.
So tell me about that kid.
Well, that kid wanted to please his dad. And that kid was a handful. And because that kid was a handful, and needed a lot of correction and strong. Couldn't give that kid an inch. That the kid started believing that for him to be okay with his dad, there was a certain way that he needed to perform. And somewhere along the line, he started believing that his best would never be good enough.
Do you remember a moment or a event that happened to you where you just believed that to be gospel truth about you and who you were? Yeah. You needed to perform in order to do good or be good?
Yeah, the moment I remember the most was it was Little League baseball, and you know, I was in the poor town. We wore the jeans and the t-shirt was our uniform, and it was All-Stars. And I remember I wasn't going to play because the games were on Wednesday night. We had church. And I remember feeling guilty because I wanted to play baseball more than I wanted to go to church. And I remember thinking, if I was a better person, I would want to choose what I was thinking was the better thing. And I didn't see me ever being that person. That makes sense? Mm-hmm. And so why try?
Mm-hmm. You just didn't have it in you.
That just wasn't in me.
Yeah.
I was never going to be good enough.
So tell me about what you needed from your dad versus, you know, instead of performing, what did you need from him?
I needed the safety of believing that I was completely loved no matter what. I'm not even saying Dad didn't give me that. I'm saying somewhere in that little brain, I was convinced that if I was fully known, I would never be fully loved. So you hide.
Kid logic, right?
Right. You fake it.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is that doesn't work, because at some point, unbeknownst to that kid, he's going to grow into a man and he's going to have a wife and some kids. And at least a subconscious level, he's going to know that this unspoken level of perfection he's not going to attain. And the thought's going to occur, if they really knew me, they wouldn't love me.
So early on in Toby's story, he learned about what he called an unspoken level of perfection. He held himself, even as a child, to the standard of perfection that he never felt permission to feel safe inside of his own skin, the permission to be who he was as a child, to want to play baseball instead of going to church. And so the body and the mind and the soul went on this path, this project to be in control at all times, to write a story of perfection, how people saw him. And as Toby clearly stated, he was convinced that if he was fully known, he would not be fully loved. When was the last panic attack for you?
Within the last 45 days. I'm not sure if the intensity is any different than it was on those first ones, but I've learned how to, what I call, ride the wave. And I have a framework for dealing with them now. I don't see them as the end of the world.
Do you judge yourself after an attack? Do you feel less than when they occur?
The answer is sometimes. But to me, the victory is not whether I have them, it's that question. So the target isn't to not have a panic attack. I mean, I still ask the Lord to heal me. I'll still be at the front of the prayer line, you know. But if he doesn't, and I'm not overcome by it, and I don't believe the lie out of it, then for me, that's a win.
Because that really is the driving question for you.
Yeah. Am I less than? So my only defense against that is to try to be as honest and authentic as I can be. The only artillery I have against the fear of being fully known is to be fully known. It's like you and I have talked before. It's self-preservation. There's a selfish nature to that. It's my only defense, really.
Because the other option doesn't work.
It doesn't work. It works short term, but it doesn't work long term. I think this is a part of where we need to recapture the power of confession. It may not be what a lot of us thought it was. It's just being honest about where you are and who you are in that moment. And then the Lord will give you glimpses of it.
Do you feel when you talk about it and share about it with others, and maybe not just with your family, but maybe people who don't know you that well, or maybe from the stage, you know, congregational members sitting there, and tell me what that's like for you, just to be known by people who may not love you or, you know, have a sense of really who you are.
Yeah, there was a season where everybody was trying to fix me, right? And so I had to preface a lot of times as I talked about that with, I don't need anybody to fix me. There are times I felt pretty judged, kind of looked down on. That mindset of, hey, that's not who you are. This is who you are. Just believe in who you are. And I'm like, that's great. If I could do that, trust me, I would. You know how many times I've been on my knees quoting the 40 I Ams, you know, writing on my things on my arm and in my, I know that's the battle. So you feel a little judged at times. But you feel pretty loved by people who share some struggle that they feel out of control. And that there's not a bow at the end of the story. You know? That it's, there's not, and here's what happened to me in the past, and then this happened, and God did this. It's, here's where I've been, here's what I'm learning, and I'm in process. And I can't do this by myself. There's a free nature to that that whole concept of, I mean, the need to impress people. The need to control how people feel about you. I mean, like my answer to that for me personally is just tell the truth. Because I do want to please people. I do care more than I should about what you think about me. Mm-hmm. I do step on stages, and before I say a word, I think in my heart, Lord, forgive me for the need to want to impress somebody. I mean, I'm aware of that's in me. I have not overcome that.
But for you to verbalize that, to say that, is part of your healing.
For me, it's part of my healing. It's in the healing, I think, comes when I say it because it's true, not because I feel it in the moment. Mm-hmm. That's not faking it till you make it. For me, the most powerful moments is when everything within me is screaming, don't say a word. And you say it anyway. And all of a sudden, a little more light comes in.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever had words inside of you that were stuck? Words about your truth that you believed needed to be hidden because you were afraid? Have you ever wondered what it would look like for you to be freed from the need to impress, to people please, be freed from the need to perform? Well, the way to cure that need, to break the fear that has held you captive, the cure is found in these three words. Tell the truth. Now we close our conversation, talking about the pieces of Toby's struggle that connect into his desire to be a good father.
There are times they look back and go, I wish Dad would have. I wish Dad would have. And me too. I think my dad didn't give me some things I needed, and I think I didn't give them some things they needed.
What do you wish you could have given them that you feel like you didn't give them?
I wish I could have more consistently sent them the message that I was for them no matter what. And I think they would tell you they think that I'm for them, but I think there were seasons of those growing up in my passion, in my flesh, that they probably got a different message than that. Don't you think?
That maybe they were, that you communicated to them that they were less than.
Yes. So as an adult, relating to them on an adult level, I just try to give them what I needed as a young adult who didn't hear that message. Mm-hmm. So I tell my son, hey, if I've ever sent you the message that your needs are a problem, I'm sorry. Just because that's what I would want to hear. Mm-hmm. And I try to tell my daughter the things that I wish I would have been in a place that my father and I could have talked about when I was 30 years old. But I see, not trying to put a rosy picture on it, but I see God working in that, Mike. I see me being aware enough of my frailty to see God connect us in ways through that. But I do fight. I want to be a better father. That's an area that I still battle.
Do you believe you are a good father?
I'm trying to believe it. I'm working to believe it.
And it's that receiving that truth.
It's receiving it deep within me.
What do you think blocks that?
I think there's a piece of me that still battles unworthiness.
It's like you can't be a good father because you're not enough of a father.
There's always something else you could do.
Yeah.
Because it's a tough hill to climb when you, at a heart level, when you define enough as perfect.
Yeah.
Which I can tell you is not true. But it sure feels true.
So the last question, I want to tell me about the not yet.
This whole concept of getting comfortable in the tension of the not yet has been the journey of the last 20 years of my life. And it's a constant reorienting of your life back to I'm going to believe in the goodness of God even when he hasn't given me what I want the most yet. I want to live in that place because I think that's where freedom is, because I think that's where most of us live. That's not the stories we tell, but it's where most of us live. And my heart is that if we were going to talk 2 days before I took my dying breath and you said, when's the last time you battled anxiety? When's the last time you felt less than? When have you fought unworthiness? And I said, well, it's a couple weeks ago. But I looked at you and said, but you know what? Really, it's well with my soul. That would be the place I'd want to be.
And may that be the place that the story eventually takes all of us to. The place where it is well with our souls. I want to thank Toby for his vulnerability, his courage to process this together, and to let us all sit in the sacred space of his struggle. Make sure that you check out Toby's church, Cross Timbers Church. Check out his messages. They're incredible. Moving, you're honest. I love this man and what he's talking about. I think you will too. You can log on to crosstimberschurch.org. They have his messages online. And if you're in the Dallas area, make sure to check out Cross Timbers Church. If you're a churchgoer, you're looking for a church, Cross Timbers is an amazing grace place with a bunch of imperfect people trying to just figure out life. So crosstimberschurch.org. And thank you again, Toby, for being my friend and being just a wonderful example to all of us. I also want to make sure, friends, that you follow me at MikeFoster2000 on Instagram, or you can head over to my website at MikeFoster.tv, and make sure to subscribe to the podcast. Always, if you can, rate it, leave a review, tell your friends, of course, tell your enemies, tell the people you don't even care about the podcast. It really would help me, mean a lot to me, help the podcast. And also, don't forget about the Rescue Academy workshop, rescueacademy.com. And thanks to Sleeping at Last, Ryan, the amazing Ryan, providing the incredible music for this episode and all the other episodes. Sleepingatlast.com. Remember, Fun Therapy is a proud member of the Relevant Podcast Network. Yes, we are. And thanks again, friends, for listening. Thanks for being you. Thanks for being a bright light in a dark world. Thank you for showing up for life and living it the way that you need to live it today. And remember, no matter what's happened in your story, that your setbacks can become your superpowers. And honesty is always the best policy. We'll see you next time on the Fun Therapy Podcast. I'm Mike Foster.
Relevant Podcast Network.